Tonight on the Goblin's Corner.
Horror Game Thematics.
That's how we roll.
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 Welcome to the Goblin's Corner. My name is Eric.
And I'm Matt.
And tonight,
we're doing Horror Game Thematics.
Indeed. This is something that we've been meaning to do for quite a while, actually, is to go into specific thematics for different types of tabletop role-playing games. And what better way to start than to go into the horror genre of TTRPGs?
Sure.
Some spooky stuff. But before we get to that, we've got a couple of interesting announcements and things that are going on. Ah, you thought it was the question of the week. We'll get to that. We actually have...
Well, we've got an introduction.
That's right.
We have a for real introduction this time, as opposed to the one where we usually just banter a little bit.
Yeah. So joining us in the lair of the Goblin's Corner Central is our own staff writer, Sigil. Sigil, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing tonight?
We're doing fantastic.
Hanging in.
So Sigil will be writing for our website, actually, for the Goblin's Corner, and he will be starting up something that we've been meaning to do for probably a couple of months now. We knew that the podcast was just the beginning of our expansion into other forms of media.
Yes, the beginning of our media empire.
That's right. And so in order to take over media in general, we've got a full-time writer, basically. Going to be writing articles, probably on, what do you think, on the weekly, at least?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I think I'm really excited about that. Sigil's a good friend of ours. We've known him for years. Actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself for the people playing the home game and maybe something about why you are writing for the site and your experience in games in general.
Sure. Yeah, I suppose I've been doing games, tabletop role-playing games in one form or another for about 25 years. In keeping with the theme of tonight's episode, I believe my first game that I ever played was AD&D 2nd Edition Ravenloft.
Ah, yes.
So, yeah, horror games are near and dear to my heart. I'm a pretty big fan of, Old World of Darkness, White Wolf. So, been doing games for a while. I want to write for the site just because I think now more than ever, games have made their way into popular consciousness. People are really starting to appreciate what an awesome hobby this is. And, a lot of good ideas, and we can all share them, and we can just improve each other's game.
Sounds good.
Yeah, sounds good to me, and I can't wait to, at some point, we'll probably write some articles, but let's be honest, we're doing this podcast, and the fact that you can build and grow this is a phenomenal thing. And, as Sigil mentioned, he is also quite nuanced in the theme of horror thematics, which is perfect for tonight's stuff.
Exactly.
Now, let's get to the nitty-gritty. You have, sir,
a question of the week.
That's right.
Yes.
So, hit us.
Tonight's question is a two-parter.
Okay.
What is the creepiest place you've run a game and or the perfect place you would want to run a creepy game?
You want to go first, Sigil?
Yeah, sure. As for the creepiest place I've run a game, I can't say that I've ever done a game in like a legitimately creepy horror place, but having run a number of horror campaigns over the years, it's all about atmosphere and making a place creepy. Now, as for, the place I would love to run a game, I would absolutely love to run a game in an abandoned mental institution. I think that would just be awesome.
That would be cool as hell, actually.
Nice. Good answer.
Yeah, man. That would be great. Just, a good place I was thinking of, like, in addition to like mental institutions and stuff like that, make maybe an old jailhouse or something would be cool.
I can see that.
Now, my personal answer for that would be probably, the perfect place would be just out in the woods, like an old school ghost story, like in the middle of the woods with a raging fire.
Nice. That would be a good place to run a dread game, certainly.
Absolutely. Now, where's the creepiest place you have run, Sigil?
Like I said, I haven't ever really haven't run a game in a super creepy place. Although, I have run a role-playing game in an abandoned barracks in Germany. Which nice. Is, it was like an abandoned, was like on the border of East Germany where there used to be the divide. We did go out there one Halloween and we did play a little bit.
That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was interesting.
What about you? What's the creepiest place you've actually run a game?
Ooh. Dragon Con at 3 a.m. in the basement. I mean, that's about as creepy as it gets. You don't, man, those lost souls just wandering to and fro after a night full of debauchery and just partying. Nerds party, man. Look it up, guys. We know. We've been there. What about you, Matt? Creepiest place you've run a game and the perfect place you want to run it.
I've ticked a lot of the boxes for running a game, running a creepy game. I have, in fact, run a game in a graveyard at night. I have run a game in an old abandoned playground.
Ooh.
Which had some creepy vibes. I have run a game at Hard Labor Creek.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
Yes.
We both played a game at Hard Labor Creek, in fact.
Yep.
That's, by the way, in Georgia, everyone. It's a, it's an old...
it's an old hard labor camp.
Yeah. That yeah. It's been turned into a wilderness retreat.
Sure. Yeah, it's a state park now. That's a special change of event anyway. But yeah, I've run a game in an old abandoned church before. I think as far as like the perfect place to run a creepy game strongly depends on what game you're running.
I agree.
And just what all of the vibes are, right? Like if you're running something gothic creepy, an old abandoned church or a Catholic cathedral would be a fantastic place to run something gothic, right?
Oh,
because
man.
You're already in the right place for it.
A mausoleum. Like I know you've been in a graveyard, yeah. But inside like a mausoleum.
A proper mausoleum.
That would be awesome.
Can you imagine rolling dice on the actual box that somebody's in,
rolling it on the corpse? Or, I mean, like not on the corpse itself, but like on the.
I'm pretty sure the dice would end up cocked fairly regularly, you know, if you rolled on the
really,
corpse.
Really brings new connotation to the phrase, you know, rolling the knuckle bones.
Yeah. Sure,
rolling the bones,
roll them bones.
Have you ever rolled dice on a corpse or in a mausoleum, or maybe you've rolled dice in other strange and horrible places? Write to us, info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric@goblinscorner.com, or
me, Matt@goblinscorner.com,
or
Sigil@goblinscorner.com.
And of course, you can find us everywhere we do podcasts, which is everywhere. Okay, let's talk about the game at hand. So we're going to talk about thematics in role-playing games and, of course, horror thematics. So I think the best way to start all of this off is what actually makes a horror game different from some other type of game, some any type of tabletop game.
I think, well, to begin with, they're thematically different. They just intrinsically, you can't run a horror game in the way that you run a fantasy game.
Yes. Yeah. It's, horror games are definitely how you theme them in terms of wording and phrasing. And Sigil and I actually talked about this before you showed up. And it's the way that it's run is, I would say, more different than any other tabletop game.
Yeah, I would totally agree. I mean, even down to the pacing, the significance of the events. I know we kind of touched on this, but I mean, you can take a standard sort of fantasy world. You know, you encounter a monster. You know, your idea is you're going to kill the monster. You're going to get some XP, maybe some loot. You're going to go, you know, adventuring on. You encounter a monster in a horror game. This is a life-changing event. And, you know, that may change the vector of the entire story for your character. So it's, yeah, it's a different emphasis for sure.
Yeah, I agree with that too. Now, in addition to thematics, it's also theatrically different.
100%.
You got to ham that up, man. Because, you know, look, if we break out the D&D, now, we've already had an episode, of course, being a host for, you know, TTRPGs.
Right.
But for a horror game, that's a special kind of host.
Yeah. You've got to set an atmosphere that is completely different than the atmosphere you can set for any other game. For example, if you're running a D&D game, if you're running a Shadowrun game, if you're running any of those standard adventure style games, right?
Sure. Yeah.
You come in, you got some pizzas, you got some beer, the lights are on, everything's chill, right? It is a social gathering amongst friends that is friendly, upbeat, right? That's a totally different atmosphere than what you set up for a horror game.
I agree. You know, you walk in, you might see plastic sheeting on the on the walls and stuff. There's a little bit of blood splatter and a thing of duct tape and some dice. And everyone's like, you guys ready to play?
And you know, that's, you joke, but that would work. I might do something like that.
Yeah.
That would really freak people out. And I think that would be fun to try. There's, yeah, atmosphere definitely means a lot. Now, it could be just a sense of, well, we'll get into like the types of atmosphere, but that definitely is something that makes it different from a lot of the other games. So, Joe, you mentioned like the narrative and the pacing. Before we get to that, I also want to mention, this is one of those games where you know what you're getting into when you play this game. And what I mean by that is if you play Starfinder, you know that you're playing a sci-fi fantasy game, but you may not know the type of game. It could be an intrigue game. It could be a, you know, just a hack and slash type campaign, those types of elements. It might even be horror. But with a horror game, you know it's horror. And we'll talk about the different types of horror. So you're kind of checking in to be scared.
Yeah. When you run a game for a horror game, your pacing changes entirely.
Yes.
It's got to. Right? Because a standard adventure, it's up, down, up, down, up, down, right? You find a monster, you beat a monster, short rest, long rest, whatever, keep it moving. You don't necessarily know how the horror is going to play out as a player, and therefore the pacing for the person running the game has to change drastically.
This is something I would say that is more heavily dependent on the storyteller than other games. Because if you don't set the pace right, then it can get corny or it loses its oomph. Like if you're going for the fear factor, you really want to like work on your narrative skills.
Yeah. One of the things about pacing, right? If everything's awful, nothing's awful.
I agree with that. Now, Sigil, you mentioned something about narrative development as well earlier when we were discussing all of this.
Yeah. Well, you know, and like you guys are saying, you know, pacing's everything. The key, I think, to a successful horror game is building suspense. And then, you know, what makes it different too as well is depending on the type of horror game you want to play, one of the things that's going to happen is you might want to face the characters with a monster, a ghost, something like that. But even then, at least at first, you want that to be sort of subdued. It's not going to turn into a straightforward conflict. It might be the case that you see something, something's chasing you, and by the time the characters finally figure out, you know, they're at that moment where they would face it, it's gone. And everything's all of a sudden back to normal.
I agree with that.
And, you know, you do this, you iterate this a few times, and it just gets more and more intense every time cyclically as the suspense builds.
Absolutely. Yeah. So narrative development, different pacing, the theatrics and the thematics really mean a lot with a horror-themed TTRPG. So let's maybe dig a little bit more into the thematics. And we mentioned atmosphere is everything, right? And setting that good scene. So what does that mean, Matt?
First off, and to me, on some level, probably the most important, if I walk into a game that is supposed to be a truly horror-themed game,
mm-hmm,
and every light in the house is on, I'm out. Like, I'm not going to operate, right? Humans, to a large extent, have a fear of the unknown. Darkness oftentimes represents that. You should have more subdued lighting. Either colored lighting, candle lights, minimal lighting to
strobe lighting. And that would be cool for combat
for the right people.
Well, that's true. Yeah. That could get headache inducing or
epileptic inducing.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. So, I mean,
session zero. Have a session zero, guys. If you have a friend that's epileptic, don't throw strobe lights at them.
Because that makes you an awful friend.
Yes.
And a not very good person in general.
Well, so, all right. So, yeah. So, set the lighting. I like the idea of a subdued tone, even different color lights. If you've got one of the Philips Hue bulbs or any of that stuff, or if you just have some candles.
Yeah.
We talked about in around Halloween and the 10 candles review.
Yeah.
That's a great example of just using lighting for narrative purposes. And nothing is lit but those candles. And at one point, when it's done, you're in the dark.
Yep.
How cool is that?
Glow-in-the-dark dice, if you can get a couple sets of those for a horror game so that you can really subdue the lighting but still see what's on the dice.
I would also recommend the glow-in-the-dark pins so that you write your character sheet. Because obviously, if you're bathing in the glow of a monitor,
right,
like some of our friends with laptops, which we all have, you know, live in a modern world here, except for Matt, then that's gonna kind of kill the mood. But if you had, you know, they make them, they glow in the dark Sharpies and stuff. My kids have them someplace. Write your character sheet out on that. Then you're literally in the dark.
Yeah, no, I'm with that. That's a great call.
That's badass. Let's talk about music, like environmental effects and such.
Yeah, so, you know, depending on the type of scene you're trying to invoke, or evoke rather, you know, you might want to use different music. You know, if your characters are going into an abandoned church, you know, an abandoned cathedral, something like that, as Matt was talking about earlier, you know, you might want some Gregorian chants in the background or something.
That's a great idea.
You know, and honestly, a lot of this stems from, I remember being a kid at Halloween time, they used to have those little cassette tapes. I'm kind of dating myself here, but they had the cassette tapes of like the spooky Halloween sounds and
You're
stuff.
Dating all of us, man.
But yeah, even something like that, you know, in the appropriate context in your game is going to add a lot to the atmosphere, a lot to the flavor of it.
I think a soundboard, Matt, you mentioned as well.
Yeah. The great things about soundboards are the person running the soundboard is the only one who's aware of what's on it.
Oh, it's definitely going to have like some ravens cawing at you at some point.
You could do ravens, 100%. The occasional church bell, like the soul
just a dong,
single.
Yeah. Dong, yeah. Some lonely, some wind whipping.
Yeah, wind howling.
Yeah,
for sure.
That'd be cool. Or even, what is it, the sound of like dust?
Another great one for gothic horror, right? The coyote or the wolf far away.
Oh, yeah.
The single call.
Rustling of leaves. All kinds of these things. And by the way, there are tons of free sound effects.
A twig snapping. Like if you're in a survival campaign.
That's awesome.
Footsteps.
A low ground. Yeah,
footsteps.
Yeah, music. I think audio. Look, if you're savvy, you got to have the soundboard. Like this would be perfect time for just bringing it all out.
As you're well aware, I generally strongly prefer tactile things. Like I prefer real character sheets and all of that, but a creaking door, all of that. If you've got a very, very, very talented voice, you can do some of these effects.
Mm-hmm.
Some things you simply are not going to fake unless you're a professional voice artist or something in that manner. Or a Foley artist that specializes in your voice. But even I am strongly for at least a small soundboard so that you can hit a button. Anybody who tries to fake a wolf call, 90% of the time, it's going to be kind of awful.
That's a good point. Now, you mentioned tactile senses as well. Let's talk about props, guys.
Yes.
Yeah, so props are a really simple and effective way to, you know, to achieve a state of immersion for your players. I give you an example of something I did years ago, and this may be dating me a bit too. This was back in the old World of Darkness days of White Wolf. We were running a Mortals campaign,
okay,
which is, you know, playing on the hard difficulty in that game world. But one thing I did as the storyteller is the characters were looking for a missing friend, and they went to search the apartment. And there was a letter, and I had handwritten this letter out, and it was a letter from someone who wasn't known, but it was a letter to the NPC that was missing. And what I did is I had put some like red dye on the bottom of the page. Was half crumpled, and it made it look like there was just like this blood spot on the bottom.
Oh, that's cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And so when the characters were looking for, you know, they did their searches, anything unusual. Well, you do find this crumpled note, and I actually handed it to the players and they could see it, you know, and we were playing by candlelight. And so,
sure,
you know, this stuff, it all adds up and it's all cumulative, and it really, really goes to strengthen the atmosphere of your game.
That's a great example. I think that's, you know, I was thinking stuff like, for some reason I thought of like knives, like just having like some blades, yeah, just sitting around that people can play with, although that could potentially be dangerous as well. Again, session zero, yeah, everyone.
Know your group.
Yeah, know your group, guys.
A piece of jewelry.
Especially if it's a kind of like a thriller game too, like a horror mystery,
yeah,
style. I think stuff like that, it would be cool to have clues that are fizz rep clues of the game, especially if you're writing that stuff out. That would be awesome.
Like for a Call of Cthulhu game where you're playing investigators, literally have like a cameo or something that comes from an NPC that
sushi,
you're looking for.
Sushi, right? That's what I would choose, is sushi. It's just a big octopus tentacle.
Sure. Yeah, some taco or, yeah, I'm with it. I got you.
Yeah. All right.
It took me a second to get there at first. You said sushi and I was just like, oh, okay.
It's okay.
No, I got you.
It's okay. So figure out some really creative ways to kind of get people in the mood. Another thing you could do is going on this sort of thing with props, the actual furniture that people sit in. So here's a good example. If you're doing a survival horror game, you're not going to be sitting on a comfy couch. You could, but if you really want to immerse in that, you might, you know, go sit in, I don't know, in your garage where it's, you know, on a concrete floor because you're in a zombie survival horror and you've been camping out on a floor for 3 months. Your character has.
Yeah. Or if it's a wooded survival area, you play that shit in the backyard.
Absolutely.
You bring a flat surface to roll on and everybody's just sitting on the grass.
Yep. So lots of different things you can do. Smells is another one.
Yes. So if you're, once again, for the Gothic horror, I'm gonna grab the church scene, right? Incense. There are places that have certain smells that are intrinsically tied to those locations.
Well, smell and memory are definitely linked.
Yes.
Well, and nothing screams Catholic church like the smell of frankincense, for example.
That's a good point. I like the idea of wood smoke. That's a good one. You could do, I wonder what you do, like a zombie survival horror game. If someone was really into it, you could maybe leave some hamburger out for a couple. I'm not even, yeah, think about it. If you're in like a zombie, that might be going a little too far, but some kind of something rotting,
yeah,
in the trash.
Once again, know your party, right? If you've got people whose stomachs can handle it, dope. If not, maybe not. Scented candles. You can get scents in everything. Like, there are so many types of scented candles.
It's
and
true.
If you just buy one of the small cheap ones or a couple of different small cheap ones, you can change the tone over and over by literally blowing out one candle and lighting another one.
That's a good point.
I totally am going to go look for a rotting corpse scented candle.
Speaking of rotting corpses, let's talk about food.
Yeah.
Now,
nice segue. Good job.
You're welcome.
Smooth.
Now, in any other type of game, and we've talked about it once again, talking about hosting a game and such, we talked about, you know, if you're doing D&D, if you really want to get into it as a host, you might have different things like sausages and, you know, ale.
Roast a whole chicken.
If you're playing Shadowrun, you want the smell of, obviously, cordite and maybe some Stuffer Shack, so go get some Taco Bell or something like that. What kind of food would you potentially serve for a horror-themed game?
Once again, very dependent on the theme of the game.
Sure. So, well, let's rattle off one real quick. So, just your typical World Darkness game. Actually, I think we actually covered that.
So, let's say you're venturer, right? You're a fancy. Probably some sushi, right? Anything that might.
Red wine.
Red wine. Right. Yeah. Anything that might be considered fancy.
What about some kind of survival game? Just anything you could pick up, like trail rations and such?
Beanie weenies.
Yeah, right? You know, beef jerky, trail mix. Yeah. You can get a hold of them in military rations.
Some ho-hos and Vienna sausages. So things...
One Twinkie that you smash a la Zombieland.
Oh, God. We're going to have to do a horror-themed game and just pull out all the stops for this stuff. This is just giving me ideas.
But yeah, if you're doing gothic horror, then depending on the time frame, you do it, you know, like I said, a roast chicken stew, anything that is thematically appropriate for the time frame. Maybe something, you know, heavy. Black pudding, if you can get your hands on it. That's a good way to go.
That'd be interesting. Yeah, so... Think about all of the senses: touch, taste, music,
smell.
Yeah, the environment as a whole. Because the more you get into it, the better the story will be, because you'll be more invested as a storyteller. Your players will be more invested as characters.
Yeah.
Now, they might hate you if you're sitting out in the cold because it's a wilderness survival game and you told them to just show up to play a game and you're making them, you know, freeze outside. So again, session zero this stuff, but I think just a little bit of flair, you can have a lot of fun with this stuff. So we've got our theatrics down. Now let's talk a little bit before we get to thematics on maybe some narrative development or some storytelling methodologies that we can sprinkle in that differ from the typical TTRPG.
Makes sense.
Now, Matt, you've listed 1, 2, 3, 4, about 5 or 6 different types of narratives that are common in games. And I think we should explore some of these.
All right. So for me, the first one that kind of comes to mind, one of the ones that I really enjoy, although I very seldom get to actually indulge in it, is a slow burn game.
All right. So what's a slow burn game?
It's where you start off in what would normally be a relatively normal setting, right? D20 Modern, or as I actually wrote, Cthulhu starts off as relatively normal. And then each little piece of the story gets a little weirder and a little darker. And the game turns up the dial on that each and every time you encounter something.
This game goes to 11.
Sure. And well, you don't want it to go to 11 because then Cthulhu rises and eats the world.
Yeah, but I mean, at some point, you're going to open that cosmic door and see something that was not meant to be seen, and there goes your madness check, guy.
But yeah, that's... a lot of people don't actually have the patience for a slow burn style game. And so it's not everybody's cup of tea. I get it. But for me, I think it's a great game if you've got people who are invested in that type of storytelling.
I agree. And there's a lot of different games out there that do that sort of slow burn. In addition, like third edition had, what was it called? Elder Evils.
Yeah.
Where that game, as you progressed along, got worse and worse and worse. And then there's Shadow of the Demon Lord, which is kind of a slow burn in a sense, because as things progress, the Demon Lord gains more prominence in the world. You mentioned Sigil. You've played Cthulhu?
Yes. Yeah.
So Sigil's, so that's a good example of that as well. What are some other ones?
I mean, you could, if you're playing, like Sigil mentioned, he played a Mortal campaign in World of Darkness. If you started that as a normal campaign,
yes,
and then just turned the dial up on it, that could be awful and
shit,
amazing.
Shit just got real.
Yeah, and that's, in fact, what I was kind of going for. That was a slow burn campaign. And
nice.
It, you know, the thing about the slow burn campaign, it's really excellent for the suspense that it builds. And it's, as Matt said, it's not everyone's cup of tea because it can seem a little bit slow. But, you know, if you can stick with it, it is truly rewarding. By the time, you know, you've cranked up the dial a few times, you know, you're generally worried for your character at that point.
Yeah.
And that's what you want.
I agree. All right. So let's talk about the survival game. Now, the survival game is way different than the slow burn. In fact, it's, I would say, the opposite, because it's fast paced.
Yep.
You've got tension. You've got generally some of them may have like a set time limit, because after, for example, 10 candles is a good example of that, right? Because after the 10 candles are burned out, it's done.
Yeah.
Which makes it great for like an evening adventure as opposed to several months. And you usually have something that is going to kill your characters straight up.
Yeah. It is literally a pass-fail game.
Yep.
There's no levels. There's no, or generally speaking, right? For a survival game, it's either you make it to whatever the goal is, or you're a corpse.
So what are some of the options, guys, that you would have running a survival game versus a slow burn game?
I guess I would say, you know, in a survival game, you want to keep the pressure on at all times. So even when, you know, the players think that they've got some breathing room, they've maybe come to safety. If that happens, it doesn't last long at all. It's always this feeling that there really truly is no safe place to be in this game. And that if you do find a moment of respite, it's so easily torn away from you as the next thing happens. So, you know, as opposed to the slow burn, which really is normality and the slow slide into, you know, otherworldly horror or something like
that. Malevolent darkness.
Yeah, absolutely. This survival game is, it's pressure on, very few breaks, and those that are torn away very quickly.
So narratively speaking, the way that you even describe your settings and stuff will be radically different.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. We've got a couple other storytelling methods and narrative developments, and we're going to get into thematics. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
We'll see you soon. This episode brought to you by...
Are you looking for a D&D podcast with a dark side? Something more like Game of Thrones and less like Monty Python? Tale of the Manticore is part dark fantasy audio drama, part solo D&D RPG. There's no plot armor here. The dice make all the important decisions. Join me as I resurrect the excitement, wonder, and emotion of old-school D&D. Made for a mature audience, Tale of the Manticore is both a fiction and a game. It's the story where chaos rolls.
If there are any topics you would like us to cover, goods or services you would like us to review, or if you would like to sponsor an episode, we would love for you to contact us at info@goblinscorner.com. See you there. And we're back.
Welcome back.
All right, so we're talking about survival game. We're talking about some storytelling methods and narrative development. And I think we've kind of explored the difference between like the survival and the slow burn. What else we got, Matt?
Well, we didn't actually meant, you know, we've been trying to suggest games that are appropriate for, like we did Cthulhu for the slow burn.
Oh, that's a good point. We didn't name some of the games for survival. Well, I mentioned 10 candles.
That's true. Dread is another perfect game for a survival game.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dread's a perfect game for something like that.
So yeah, past that we were going with thrillers, which are, I don't know if they technically count as horror, but they're in the same neighborhood, right? They live right down the street.
Well, if you do something like, you guys remember the movie Seven?
Yes. Yeah.
If you do something in like that genre, or even like a dark, gritty noir, then I think thrillers would be perfectly fine.
It counts? Yeah, okay.
Well, to that point, actually, I remember watching Seven, and I don't know if you guys remember this movie Fallen, had Denzel Washington in it.
Yes.
And he was basically squaring off against this demon that was just messing with him the whole time. But it always seemed to me like those two stories were part of the same world. They might as well have been. You know what I mean? Even though Seven was more like a thriller, there was not really an overt supernatural element to it. Those two things were totally, in my mind, the same world.
I could see that. That's a good observation.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, we've got something bad happening in a thriller a lot of times, and it's usually like an event or sometimes a murder or something like a crime being committed.
Sure.
And you gotta figure that out. So a lot of times thrillers have a lot of mystery in them, which is where, like, you talk about props, man, clues. Yeah. This is a perfect game for, you know, I want some Sam Spade, you know what I'm saying? Like playing some saxophone music playing in the background. I want a cigar and, you know, some whiskey, maybe an old fashioned.
Yeah. Some scotch.
Some scotch would be perfect for this. Yeah.
Well, it's always good.
Yeah. Something, you know what I mean? Like, get out your trilby hat, get out your fedora.
Yeah, straighten out your fedora there, sport.
And go to town. This is going to be, because if you want to thematically play with this stuff, that's the way you do it. Now, talking about how you linguistically develop this game, narratively develop this game, that's where you start digging into a lot of the tropes. We're talking 1920s, 1930s type stuff. You know, modern day thrillers, you're going to do it a little bit differently, but you can follow on tropes like detective novels, CSI type stuff.
Yeah, true crime stories.
Yeah, true crime is true crime would be great. That actually, I would say, watch that. That's a thriller.
Yeah.
And that's actually, I would say that's a slow burn too.
Thrillers usually are. The end result is the difference between a thriller and a slow burn, I think, rather than the methodology.
Now, some other thrillers could be something not necessarily like slasher or survival, but very similar in that it's not as overt. So I think keep thinking some of the like Panic Room, where like an event happens and you're locked in, you're in a situation, and you have to get out. And there's bad guys on the out. The Purge would be kind of like a thriller too, although it's more gory than a typical thriller, I guess. It could be.
There was a movie, I believe it was on Netflix. It's called Circle.
Okay.
And it's not what you would typically think of, I guess, as a thriller, but really, if you really look at it. So the premise of the whole thing was just very simply put, people find themselves, they wake up in this room and they're all in a circle and there are little circles on the ground that they're standing on. And it turns out that they have to like vote to see who's going to die next.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, we watched that movie. Yeah. That was awesome. Yeah. And ended up being, well, we don't want to give it away, but yeah. So something like that.
Yeah, super cool movie.
That was really cool. Speaking of which, that was kind of sci-fi-esque, where you find out at the end. Let's talk about sci-fi horror, which is, I kind of feel, a genre of horror. And it's kind of like a mix between survival and thriller in my head.
Yeah, I think so. Take Aliens, right? Okay. That realistically is the first one certainly was sci-fi horror, 100%.
Yeah, for sure. And the second one is arguably, you could almost argue that that's sort of like a primarily an action movie, but even then, you know, you're kind of looking at a more of a survival.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
So sci-fi horror takes on a lot of the thriller aspect. So whereas in a game, you might be doing World of Darkness for a thriller, some Cthulhu or some Dread or something like that, an Aliens or another RPG like Mothership is focusing more on, I just want to say, like the visceral horror of stuff. And or even, you could even get into like the morality horrors as well. So for example, sci-fi horror often encompasses stuff like the hubris of humanity.
Yeah, look at Black Mirror. I mean, that's an entire series premised on that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Or what's that movie where Event Horizon?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they delved in, they actually found a portal through hell because they're seeking faster than light.
Right.
The game Doom is a good example of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, the old Doom 3, that is a prime example of survival horror at its finest, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. So sci-fi horror is really a version of one of these, either survival or thriller or slow burn, but in space. And so it's a bit edgier, and there's xenomorphs.
And unlike most of these, there is a chance to directly conflict the target of the horror.
Oh, yeah. You might actually be able to, you know, hop in a mech and start busting ass.
Right. There are methodologies that you can discover throughout the sci-fi horror use against them.
How they mostly come out from at night, mostly.
Yeah.
Nuke 'em from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. All right, let's talk about gothic horror now.
All right. Now, this is I feel like this is part of Sigil's major ballywick.
This is his wheelhouse all day long.
Yeah, it really is. You know, examples of this, well, even like the Ravenloft setting is a good example of gothic horror. You know, World of Darkness stuff.
How does it differ in terms of other games?
Well, in gothic horror, a lot of times I think the themes that are sort of examined and focused on deal with, like, morality. So in some ways, the gothic horror story is an allegory about sort of like humanity's sort of inner darkness. And it's represented as an external supernatural threat most often. But even in that context, a lot of times you will see the protagonists will be faced with morality choices in an attempt to survive, which really kind of, you know, puts them, because, you know, you might be faced with having to do something really wrong or even potentially evil and thereby corrupting yourself in order to try to escape, you know, this supernatural thing.
So like werewolves being taken over by the beast or in vampire. You have a humanity score.
Yeah, vampire is a great example of that, because that is really kind of the central theme of vampire itself, is you're struggling with your own inner darkness and trying not to succumb to the beast.
Sin Eater is another good example of that as well.
Well, you've also got the Manitous from
Deadlands.
Deadlands.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Get risen back up. You've got this nasty spirit just living inside you, trying to get ready to tear people apart.
Yeah, and I would be remiss if I didn't mention there's this game. It's, I don't know how well known it is. It's probably pretty little known these days. It came out in the 90s. It's called Cult with a K, and it was originally a Swedish game, and there was a lot of controversy around it. There was some kind of moral panic in Sweden at the time, much like in the 1980s D&D had experienced, and it was attributed to, you know, suicides, kidnappings, and stuff like that. But it is in some way similar to like the World of Darkness, but way darker. If it's not for the faint of heart, I will say that. But if you're up for it, you can probably find a PDF somewhere, and it's choice.
That sounds really cool. And finally, we have comic horror, which is should be noted, because I always believe that if everything is just pounding you with horror, then you've got to have a little bit of levity with that as well. So we mentioned, you know, my brain always goes to Evil Dead when I think of comic horror, but there's lots of, you know, film and books you can draw from. I also mentioned Sliver in there because Sliver's kind of funny.
Dracula, Dead and Loving It.
Oh, little Leslie Nielsen in there? Yeah, man. I'd be down with that.
Yeah, and you know, I love Old World of Darkness, don't get me wrong, but a lot of times the games were an attempt at one of the other types, you know, the slow burn, the thriller, gothic horror for sure, but oftentimes it sort of kind of devolved into comic horror. Every Werewolf the Apocalypse game I've ever played has pretty much turned into this.
When you're playing a bunch of were-rats, it's no longer horror. It's just...
You know, the World of Darkness gets pretty crowded with the changing breeds pretty quick.
Well, to me, when you're playing a group of were-rats, like, it's a survival game. It's fast-paced, and there's a very high chance that you're going to die.
Yeah, but it's like... So, it's just my personal opinion. Your opinion may differ. Playing a bunch of were-rats in a World of Darkness, in the old World of Darkness campaign, was very much like playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It wasn't about the horror. It was just like, what kind of animal can I play today?
Yes. Yeah.
Now, again, that's fun. And comic horror tends to follow, it's a little bit slasher, it's a little bit spooky, but it's also comedy of errors in many ways as well. So you'll end up having, oh, look, I'm playing Shaun of the Dead, right? So
sure.
He just got eaten by something. Oh, God, that's a horrible thing that just happened to him. And then you just laugh at it.
Yeah. Well, you can even say realistically, like Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo could be comic horror, sure, or comic mystery.
Right. But it's always a supernatural force. I mean, now, sure, you know it's not.
Now,
but
if Scooby got decapitated, then that's comic horror.
Yeah, I think the key to the comic horror is, as it plays with some of these other themes and some of the other plays with the atmosphere of a horror game, there's always this sort of element of the absurd that eventually just sort of takes central place.
I agree with that. Yeah, that makes sense to me, because then it makes the stuff that's scary a bit scarier.
Right.
And it's a good balance between have a good laugh and then scare the shit out of your players.
Right.
All right. So we've covered a little bit of narrative structures. Let's talk a little bit about maybe some of the themes, the actual thematics to these genres. And by the way, it should be noted that there's not really a game that focuses on one. You're going to have elements of all of these types of things when you're playing whatever game of choice you happen to have. But some tend to lean towards some or the other.
And this is absolutely not an exhaustive sort of list, and even like the thoughts on them aren't exhaustive. It's just some things that you can lean into.
We toss some things with our addled brains, and this is what we've come up with for this podcast. Congratulations. All right, so hit me. What do we got?
Well, I mean, your first one is one of the true classics, the theme of blood, right? Whether it's being eaten, whether it's being spilled, whether it's being sacrificed, painted with, spread, or even just the power of it. Blood is a deep, consistent theme in basically all horror.
Good descriptors of things like that as well.
Yeah.
Good clues if you're doing a mystery. The absence of things except for that blood might be kind of fun. What is it? I'm going to phrase it wrong, but whatever Alfred Hitchcock said, it's not what is shown, it's what you don't see, because the mind fills in the rest.
Right.
So a couple of blood splots here and there and a slightly rusted door. That's all you need, brother.
Yeah.
What's behind it? Some eldritch horror?
Who knows?
Some kind of zombie waiting to just feast on your brains?
But if you present your players with a couple of drops of blood and a rusty door, they're going to start, those wheels are going to spin furiously.
Oh, yeah. Especially if you can't open the door. Like it's rusted shut, and they're like, what the hell's behind this? I've got to know.
All right. So what are some other themes we got here?
Life. So life ended, or life being absorbed, sacrificed, or wasted. And this, if you want to get metaphorical with it, you could consider a zombie horror game to be life wasted. One of the running themes I've read up about like zombie horrors is people's fears of being a number or being mindless.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
like, yeah, subject to conformity.
Yeah, yeah. And so your life wasted is because you've conformed with the rest of humanity and stuff, and you're just kind of a mindless, you know, robot or whatever.
Makes sense. What you got back there, Sigil?
I think that's really an astute sort of salient observation. but with the zombie genre, I hadn't really quite thought about it in those terms. Though now that you mention it, it actually seems kind of obvious, right? And it's probably accounts for its popularity in more recent times. You know, over the last, decade and a half, zombie movies, the zombie genre has become huge, and probably it is largely because of that. Mm-hmm. You know, fears of, you know, just being, what do they call it, like a corporate drone, you know, or just subject to a bunch of rules, going through the motions, and yeah, I can absolutely see that. But, you know, I think, you know, Life and Blood share a lot of similarities in many ways. Blood is a metaphor for life. So there's a lot of crossover between those two themes, I think.
Yep. And by the way, going on the whole mentality and stuff of like zombies versus other horrors, kaiju, big giant monsters and stuff. You know, Godzilla was the whole fear of nuclear warfare because it was, because he's uncontrollable, unstoppable. And so it's interesting how like the giant monster, because there's a whole set of kaiju, right? Whether you talk about the giant insects in them or Night of the Lupus, which is a bunch of giant bunnies that, by the way, they kill with power lines. They run them into power lines. Or...
A way to just ruin that movie for everyone.
Oh, come on. Look, it's been around since the 50s, all right? If you haven't watched that.
You suck.
But it's interesting, the mentality, like the mentality behind all of that stuff. Let's talk about time. Time's another thing that happens, the passage of time, right?
Yeah. So in horror, one of the great uses of time, especially in the survival game, right? Like, how long is it till dawn? In a lot of games, when the sun rises, the problem is over with.
Dead by dawn, dead by dawn.
The other question is, how many minutes are there till dusk, right? Because...
Racing against the clock.
That's the onset of the time of fear in a lot of horror games. Losing time, right? Because if there's a ticking clock and you're trying to get somewhere or anything that slows you down is something that ramps tension.
Indeed. We've got curses. Let's talk about curses, guys.
All right. Which curse you want to talk about?
Like, well, obviously the physical curse first. So we've got, and this again, tropes, right? Lycanthropy.
Sure.
Undeath. Something, some kind of monster. So like maybe turning into some kind of crazy beast. Yep. Or strange sci-fi hybrid horror.
The fly.
The fly is perfect. Yeah. Insect shamans, guys. In Shadowrun.
That's not really horror, though. That's voluntary.
Look, my character was voluntary just because he wanted to turn into a 6.5-foot termite.
And there's something horrible about that.
Fair point. Yeah. His character was the horror of the... Okay, that's fair.
We've got spiritual curses.
Yeah. I mean, whether or not it makes you evil... Or even undead again, right? Becoming a ghost. That's technically a spiritual type of curse.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a matter of fact, I would argue that amongst all of the Old World of Darkness games, honestly, the most terrifying game was Wraith.
Wraith was awesome.
Yeah. Wraith was hands down, in my opinion, the best of those games. Because it was like a spiritual curse. You were stuck in this state, and you were doomed no matter what you did. And you were facing oblivion, and you were facing this darkness that was going to swallow you whole, and that was inevitable.
Now we're on the theme of curses, and fate is another type of curse. And I want to bring up, because again, World of Darkness did it great. Changeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
You get. Because you are fated to be just messed with. Regular person walking down the road and just something fucking takes you. And you're just gone. You've lost sense of time. You might be physically changed, but all you know is that you're back. You've escaped through the hedge and you're constantly on the look for some alien being that's about to grab you and drag you back to whatever personal hell you were once in.
Yeah, and since time works differently in Arcadia, that moment could come any time.
Yep.
You're never, never quite sure if you've truly escaped it.
Now, Matt, you wrote down beset by tragedy or doomed to fail, and that, I want you to explain a bit more of that as well.
Okay, so if you've got different types of curses, right? Like, undeath is a form of curse. But what about a literal curse, like a curse that has been set on you, right? Your traditional horrific blood curse or what have you.
Like Stephen King's Thinner?
Yeah, very much like Stephen King's Thinner.
I was just thinking of Thinner.
Yep. So that is a fate-style curse. Someone curses you to never feel or receive love again. Someone curses you to just be constantly beset by tragedy. And sometimes a different curse could realistically trigger that.
I could see that.
Like the curse of vampirism, right? You're literally going, even if you ignore everything else, you're going to outlive everybody you've ever loved.
Yeah.
Or you're going to curse them to the same urges that you have. Those are your only choices.
And that brings up like moral choices and stuff later on, which we'll get to. Yeah, curses are hopping, man. Throw some curses in your thematics. Hopelessness is another great one as well.
Yeah.
Horror games, survival horror, it's hopeless. Ten Candles is great. I'm going back to Ten Candles again.
Sure.
But you know when you roll into this game, you are going to die. It's just not a matter of if, it's about a matter of when. And a lot of zombie survival horror, any type of horror survival game, has that, if you're being a good storyteller, has that theme of hopelessness in it.
I was just going to say, Dread, you know the blocks are coming down.
Yeah, for sure. You know, hopelessness, even if it's not, even if you scaled that back a little bit, this is something that I think is a hallmark of horror games, is you can almost rest assured that no matter what happens, your character's not coming through this unscathed. You know, it's not like and other genre of games, you can expect to truly be changed for the worse at the end of it, you know, and that kind of feeds into that hopelessness. And you can extrapolate that into a longer running theme over a campaign.
Yeah. And what, how are you going to be hopeless, right? Is it, you can be swallowed by the darkness. You're going to be turned, changed into something. It's something is inevitable.
Yeah.
Let's talk about shadows and darkness. That's another theme.
It definitely is. I didn't make a lot of notes on this because I feel like on some level it's relatively self-explanatory.
Kind of descriptive in its nature when you talk about the themes. You're going to want to narratively enhance it with those concepts, right? Shadows and darkness. And, you know, we equate evil to dark, but that doesn't necessarily have to be that way.
No, it doesn't. And I thought about at putting in... There are times where light can be the evil, but it's just not something I got to because we have a very long list as it is.
It's true. We should probably do the bonus round on some of this stuff.
That's true. All right. But so shadows and darkness, you use them descriptively. Are the shadows sharp edged? Are they moving? Are they right? Like, is there a sudden absence of light?
It's a shit in the darkness, like just waiting to get you.
Exactly.
Yeah, the weather's a great example of that as well. So gloomy weather or stormy weather, or maybe it's, you know, I don't know, tragic horror on the beach as you're swimming out. You know, you're getting ready to surf a little bit or something like that, and you just see that, dun-dun. Just waiting to get you.
All right, we got a weakness. Once again, that's relatively self-explanatory if you...
Fear, mental or spiritual, emotional. We've got, speaking of emotions, fear. It wouldn't be a horror game without fear, right, guys?
That's the point.
The essence.
Now, one thing I think is fun is to focus on specific types of fears, like phobias. And, you know, if your players are down with this, that would be an awesome element for a session zero to figure out.
Yeah, definitely.
Like, if you're good friends with these people and you can get away with this, mess with their fears a bit. Like, if you know your buddy hates spiders, got to throw some spiders into your game.
Yep.
Monstrous spiders.
And once again, it's a matter of how phobic somebody is and their comfort level. Like, we are not saying if you've got a friend who is psychotically fearful of clowns to like pop out with a Bozo the Clown mask on. That's not what we're saying here.
No, that'd be bad. Like, remember, these are your friends. Give them a scare, but don't give them a heart attack. Other ideas we have, the concept of souls, their journeys or destinations, and that's pretty typical in a lot of like monster games, like any of the World of Darkness stuff, or even some stuff in some of the more contemporary games as well.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like souls are kind of a touchstone for basically every type of game, on some level or another.
Yeah, you tend to get metaphorical and stuff with that. You've got pain, so torture or physical pain, and that can be any of the genres as well. So, Joe, you mentioned humanity's inherent evil and darkness. I want you to describe that a little bit more in depth, because that's an interesting thematic to get into as well.
Yeah, well, I think in some sense, our attraction as people to horror stories is one, it's exploring things, it's exploring these things in a way that's in a safe environment. But also, I think it's like an allegory for the more unpalatable parts of, the human mind or soul or something. We all have parts of us that we repress, like the Jungian shadow, think of,
Okay.
And I think a lot of times in horror games, it's a perfect opportunity to sort of explore that, which is, what I sort of talked about earlier, when one of the great things you can do in the right type of horror game is give your players moral choices, that will either aid or hinder their survival, and see what they do with that. Because if they choose to do something immoral to increase the odds of their survival, well, now there's more than just one monster in the game, isn't there?
That's a great point. Yeah. Sometimes it's not the monster that's the scary part of the horror game. It's the players finding out that they're the monster.
Yeah. And maybe that's where the true horror actually lies.
Interesting. Another concept as well is things best left undisturbed.
Sure. I mean, you've got just the old school mummy as the perfect example for that, right? Like, none of that would have happened if they'd have just left the place alone.
Yeah, you're digging in the damn dirt. You find a mummy. You know what you do? You bury him back up. Don't be messing with the mummy. You get the mummy's curse. Now you're rotten.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this seems to be like the central theme, to like any Cthulhu game, right?
It's all about Cthulhu.
100%.
I mean, that really is what this is about.
It's tentacles, forbidden knowledge, and strange geometry.
Yeah, some things are better left buried, right?
Yep.
Absolutely.
If you find a book that's bound in human flesh, screaming face on the front, maybe put that back on the shelf.
Did you say the exact words? And finally, we come to, as far as thematics, monsters. Because horror games are all about monsters. Now, that could be monsters as far as looking into oneself.
Sure.
And the monster within, or just straight up fucking nasty ass monsters.
Yep. There's a whole lot of things that fit the definition of monster. And anything terrible, or any sentient thing that is terrible, is monstrous on some level. And that's most people, even good people, have monstrous components. And that's part of the, Sigil was saying just a moment ago, that's part of the exploration of any horror game. It's not just exploring the monsters outside, but the monsters that are inside you.
And interestingly enough, I think that this is also why characters never get through a horror game, if it's run right, unscathed.
Yeah.
Because, there is no facing that darkness or that monster in oneself without being changed by it.
And that's why we like playing them.
Absolutely.
So there you have it, guys. all kinds of interesting information to throw at your players. We've got some fun thematics, some ways of, you know, setting the scene, so to speak. And of course,
a couple of things just to ruminate on maybe a little bit.
I would definitely would agree to that. Yeah. So if we miss something, let us know. Write to us. info@goblinscorner.com, or you can reach me, Eric@goblinscorner.com.
Me, Matt@goblinscorner.com.
Me, Sigil@goblinscorner.com.
We're on all the things, guys. We have a Facebook. We have an Instagram. We have a Twitch channel. We've Twitter. Got, of course, Twitter. We talk a lot on Twitter. Yeah. And we'll be moving to other venues as well.
Pinterest.
Pinterest, of course. Yes, we don't forget Pinterest whenever I remember to actually post to Pinterest. We also have delightful swag on TeePublic. If you wish to buy some stuff, please do. We'll buy us a new microphone or, I don't know, something. And, of course, you can always hit us up, goblinscorner.com, where you can find us on all the things. We have a list of all the things you can listen to. Can I say all the things more?
I imagine you can say it at least once.
I think so, yeah. All right. So that's all the time we have for today. Once again, my name is Eric.
I'm Matt.
I'm Sigil.
We'll see you next time. The Goblin's Corner has been written and produced by Eric Holden and Matt Stamps.
Music by D20.
This is a Subterranean production.